When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Allo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome, everyone, to this UFC 300 preview edition of Couch Potato Diary. My name is Peter Klein. Thank you very much for tuning in today. This entire show is going to be dedicated to UFC 300. So lock in. We're going to preview every fight on this card as the Ultimate Fighting Championship for the 300th time, give or take a couple, puts on a marquee event, this time from T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. We were promised gigantic star power for the main event, and while we didn't get that, this is still one of the most stacked cards in history, and perhaps the star power of the show itself will transfer over to whoever comes out victorious on the main event stage here at UFC 300. Let's get right into it with our fight preview. All right, we are going to start at the bottom and work our way up. All of this order is according to Wikipedia. Davison Figueiredo goes up against Cody Garbrandt. Figueiredo is 36 years old, standing at 5'5". He is born in Brazil, trains at Fight Ready and Shootabox Diego Lima. 22-3-1 for the career. 9 wins by knockout, 8 by submission. He has been submitted and lost by decision one time each. He's coming off of a unanimous decision win over Rob Font in his last bout, which was his bantamweight debut, and his first non-Moreno fight since November 21st, 2020. That was also the last time he finished an opponent. He's 10-3-1 in the Ultimate Proving Ground, a pro since 2012. His brother Francisco also fought in the Ultimate Fighting Championship, and he walks to the cage coming up on Saturday with a BJJ black belt. Facing Cody Garbrandt, another former champion, at 32 years old, born in Ohio. He trains now out of Extreme Couture. 14-5 is the record, 11 wins by knockout, 3 by decision. He has 4 knockout losses and 1 decision loss. His last bout coming at UFC 296, a renaissance performance, a knockout win in the first round over Brian Kelleher. It's back-to-back wins after back-to-back losses for the former UFC bantamweight champion. He is 3-4 in his last 7, and he's finished 2 of those 3. He's been in the UFC since 2015, amassing a record of 9-5, and a pro since 2012. Really fun fight to start this card, and a fight that definitely could be a fight night like headliner, or a like fight that's on a pay-per-view, but on like the main card of the pay-per-view. Intriguing bout, and admittedly going into this one, you just immediately think of Cody Garbrandt as someone who is cooked, and someone who just isn't on that level that he is at anymore. Given the fact that he needed back-to-back wins to get to 3-4 in his last 7, that means the previous 5 didn't go great for him. But you watch the fight against Kelleher, and there is still something there. Specifically the speed that he is able to throw his punches at. There is speed, there is power in all of it. The thing is, though, with Figueiredo, you're not going to catch him off guard with speed because of the division he just came from. They're fast at 125 pounds. He is fast as well. He showed, again, in the Rob Font fight that his power, I think, carries from 125 to 135 pounds. And again, fighting at a 3-round pace, I think he is going to feel very, very comfortable here. So while Garbrandt may lose this fight, I do think that Figueiredo is going to be tested here. I do think Figueiredo comes away with a win, probably a unanimous decision victory. But I don't want to come out of this fight thinking that, okay, well, it's now 3-5 in his last 8 for Garbrandt. He's done. Because there are still some talents there and a lot of skills there for Cody Garbrandt. He's just not on the level of the former champion at 125 pounds. Then we get into some old school violence. Bobby Green taking on Jim Miller. Bobby Green, 37 years old, born in San Bernardino, California, training at Pinnacle MMA. 31-15-1 for the career, 11 wins by knockout, another 9 coming by submission. He has been knocked out 5 times in his career and submitted another 2. One of those career knockouts came in his last bout at the UFC on ESPN in December of 2023 when Jalen Turner was given quite a few extra shots to put away Bobby Green, and then that is when the finish came. It ended a 3-fight unbeaten streak that did include a no contest in there. He's finished his last 2 wins and been finished in his last 3 losses. Green has thrown landed the most significant strikes and total strikes in lightweight history. He's been in the UFC. This was wild to me. Since 2013, not that you think of him as new, but it's just wild that that whole turnover from Strikeforce into this happened all the way back then. 12-10-1 is the record in the UFC after a 4-1 stint in Strikeforce. He's been a pro since 2018. Miller, 40 years old, born in Sparta Township, New Jersey, training appropriately at Miller Brothers MMA. 37-17 for the career with 1 no contest, 20 wins by submission, another 7 by knockout, 2 knockout losses, 3 submission losses. His last bout coming earlier this year, a submission win in the 3rd round over Gabriel Benitez. It's now back-to-back wins for Miller. He has finished both. He has won 5 of his last 6. He's finished all of them. The judges' scorecards, not kind to Jim Miller. He hasn't won a decision since 2016, and he hasn't been finished since 2018. He has the most fights and wins in the history of the UFC. When you combine all the organizations that Zuffa owned, so UFC, eventually Pride, WEC, and eventually Strikeforce, he is behind only Donald Cerrone and Wanderlei Silva. Second most finishes in UFC history, second most subs in UFC history behind Charles de Bronx. Most fight time in the history of the UFC's lightweight division at 6 hours, 32 minutes, and 47 seconds inside the octagon. He made his debut at UFC 89. UFC commentator Michael Bisping was in the main event of that against Chris Lieben, and it was on Spike TV, which super doesn't exist anymore. He fought on UFC 100 and 200 and now gets the spotlight for a 3rd time at a century mark. 26-16 in the UFC with 1 no contest, pro since 2005, BJJ black belt and a Division 1 wrestler. I love what Miller is doing here late in his career. He's not looking to push for a title. He is just looking to compete in the octagon and see if he still has it. And he does, right? Like the Benitez fight was, I think, a real excellent showcase of the skills that he has. He still has the hand speed. He is still technically sound as a striker, and he is still a skilled grappler. There isn't one area where he is exceptional, but there isn't one area where it's like, okay, this is where we can catch him. Where Bobby Green throws from everywhere, and he throws with reckless abandon, and he throws with significant power. And so Miller is not a significant underdog in this fight, but Miller is an underdog in this fight. I think that he, like, at this point, you're not catching Jim Miller by surprise. The man has fought 37 wins, 17 losses, 1 no contest. So that's what, 55 fights that he has had in his pro career. He's had the most fights in the history of the Ultimate Fighting Championship. There isn't anything that's going to be like, oh, wow, haven't seen that before. Don't know how to deal with that. And a lot of what Bobby Green does is catching you off guard with both the angles that he throws his punches with, the power and the speed that he can bring them with. I just don't think Jim Miller falls for that. So I think Miller ends up getting an upset win. It's not going to be a pick that I click or anything like that, but I do think Miller comes away with a victory in this fight. I think it's going to be an absolute wild showcase, but I think eventually Jim Miller does end up getting the win. Really fun fight in the women's strawweight division as Jessica Andrade faces Marina Rodriguez. Andrade, 32 years old, born in Brazil, training at Paraná Vale Tudo. 25-12 for the career, 10 wins by knockout, another 8 by submission, 5 knockout losses, and 4 submission losses. Her last fight came at UFC 295. It was a TKO over Mackenzie Dern in the second round, which ended a 3-fight losing streak. It's her first TKO win since 2021. The former UFC strawweight champion is 16-10 in the UFC, where she has resided since 2013 and has been a pro since 2011. Rodriguez, 36 years old, born in Brazil, training at Thai Brazil and AS team, 17-3-2 in her career, 7 wins by knockout, 1 by submission. She has been knocked out once and has 2 decision losses, coming off of just an absolute ass-kicking of Michelle Watterson Gomez back in September of 2023. A TKO win in the second round very easily could have been stopped in the first round. That did end a 2-fight losing streak for her, and was also her first TKO win since 2021. Also has wins over Mackenzie Dern and Yan Xiaonan. The Dana White Contender Series alumni is 7-3-2 in the octagon and has been a pro since 2015. I am so intrigued by this fight because now neither of them faced a whole lot of resistance in their last bouts. Mackenzie Dern has improved on the feet, but that improvement still showed her to be quite lacking at certain things. And one of those is not getting punched in the brain by Jessica Andrade. And Rodriguez put on an absolute clinic against Watterson Gomez back in September. I do think that Andrade, at her time, one of the more dangerous fighters in the history of the women's strawweight division. The power that she throws with the speed that she is able to bring, it caught Mackenzie Dern. They were in a bit of an exchange, and just a boom catches Mackenzie Dern, and that's it. Rodriguez has a similar length to Dern, but is significantly more talented when it comes to the striking world. The one area where I would have concern for Rodriguez is Michelle Watterson Gomez got the first takedown of the fight really, really easily. And she is not the wrestler that Jessica Andrade can be, just the physical strength that Andrade has. And so if Andrade can get that takedown as easily as Watterson Gomez did, then it's going to be a bit of a rough night for Rodriguez. But if Rodriguez is able to stop the takedown, she has, I would suggest, elite striking from the clinch. Her knees, the way she is able to generate force with her knees is tremendous. The elbows are a weapon as well. And I do think that she is long enough and has a bit of an understanding of distance that she is going to be able to keep Andrade off of her for lengths of this bout. So I actually have the upset here. I think Rodriguez gets it as a plus 120 underdog. It's one of the picks that I'm clicking on this one. I just feel like Andrade, it's a great win against Mackenzie Dern, but I think people are forgetting what we saw in the previous 3 fights and just remembering the ass kicking she put on Dern. And I get Rodriguez has also lost back-to-back fights going into her fight back in September. I just feel like there is a little bit more, and it's a bit of a difficult matchup for Andrade against Rodriguez. Moving into the lightweight division, one of the more intriguing prospects gets the showcase here on UFC 300 as Jalen Turner goes up against Renato Moicano. Turner is 28 years old out of San Bernardino, California, training at RVCA Training Center. 14-7 for his career, has finished all of them, 10 wins by knockout, 4 by submission, and he's been stopped in all of them, 3 knockout losses, 4 submission losses, coming off of one of the biggest wins of his career, a knockout victory over Bobby Green that we talked about before in December of 2023, ended a 2-fight losing streak. Both were by split decision. He's 7-4 in the UFC, started the run at 1-2, then won 5 in a row, then lost 2, and is now coming off of a victory. Coming off of the Dana White Contender Series, he's also 2-0 in Bellator and 1-0 in the World Series of Fighting, and has been a pro since 2016. Taking on Moicano, 34 years old, out of Brasilia, Brazil, training at American Top Team, 18-5-1 for the career, has 10 wins by submission, 8 by decision, has 3 knockout losses and 1 submission loss, coming off of a unanimous decision win over Drew Dober back on Ultimate Fight Night just a couple of months ago in February, was the first decision win since 2018. Has won back-to-back fights and 4 of his last 5. Seems to just get on a roll and then hit some stiff competition and then kind of gets stuffed. But he's been in the UFC since 2014, 10-5 in the octagon. The only other promotion he's fought for is Jungle Fight, where he won their interim featherweight championship. This is a really, really interesting fight for me because they both have clear ways of winning it. Turner, I think, is significantly more advanced than Moicano is on the feet, whereas Moicano is a lethal grappler when the fight gets to the ground. The interesting thing about Moicano is he has, I think, significantly improved his striking. Now, Turner, we weren't going to see how the grappling has improved in a fight against Bobby Green. So we don't know where that grappling is at necessarily, as this is a fighter who I think does continue to improve. And the record in the UFC does seem a little bit... It doesn't seem great when I'm talking about a guy as an intriguing prospect at 155 pounds. But I think the length that he brings, I believe he's the tallest lightweight right now in the Ultimate Fighting Championship, and there is a bit of mass to him. His ability to use those long punches, use his range, use his size, and the power with which he is able to throw is really dangerous for Moicano. If this fight goes to the ground, I don't know how long it's going to last, but I think Turner is skilled enough on the feet that he is going to be able to get the job done, use that ability to generate power with just straight up the middle punches and continue on this trajectory. I am really, really high on Jalen Turner, and I think it is... almost a bit of a disservice that Oliveira and Sarukian are facing off for in a title eliminator. I think it's just because, like, Turner, again, he's lost back-to-back fights, so winning this fight shouldn't put him in a title opportunity, but I could see him in the next title eliminator in the lightweight division. I think he is that good, but it will be a significant step up in competition for him for sure, but really excited for this. Another prospect people are excited about comes in the featherweight division with Diego Lopez taking on Sadiq Yusuf. Yusuf is 33 years old, born in Nigeria, training with Team Lloyd Irvin. 13-3 in his impressive mixed martial arts career. 6 wins by knockout, 1 by submission. Has been knocked out once in his career. His other 2 losses required the judges, including back on the Ultimate Fight Night in October of 2023. A unanimous decision loss to Edson Barbosa, ended a 2-fight winning streak for him. Both his UFC losses have come by decision. He comes into the octagon from Dana White's Contender Series, where he has a 5-2 record, having been with the promotion in 2018, 2 years after he started professionally. Lopez, 29 years old, out of Brazil, training at Lobo Gym MMA. 23-6 for the career, 9 wins by knockout, another 12 by submission. He's been stopped twice in his career, both by knockout, and has 4 decision losses. Coming off of an incredibly impressive knockout win over Pat Zabatini at UFC 295, back-to-back first-round finishes, he has won 4 of his last 5, finishing all of them. He made his debut in 2023 and went 2-1. His last decision win is back in 2019, and he's been a pro since 2012. He is extremely long for the featherweight division. The stand-up has improved. The grappling is absurd. And he is a very dangerous fighter because he is one where every time he steps into the octagon, he has taken a giant step. So the Lopez that you are studying film on, and there isn't a ton because of back-to-back first-round finishes, but the Lopez you're spending your time doing that tape study on, that's version 2.0. He's up on 3 and 4.0. I am so intrigued by this talent. He almost won his UFC debut and just ended up on the wrong side of it. I think against Yusuf, with all due respect, I think Yusuf is a really interesting fighter as well, but I just think this is so simplistic, but I do think there are just a few more tools in the toolbox for Diego Lopez to pick up a win in this bout. So I like the Brazilian over the Nigerian in what should be a really fun fight. Like, it sounds like I'm discrediting Sadiq Yusuf. I am not. I think he is a very smart fighter. I think he is a very powerful fighter, and I just feel like Lopez is on this upward trajectory right now, and I'm really intrigued by him coming up on Saturday night. I actually have him minus 140, so that is another pick that I'm clicking here on UFC 300. Moving on to the women's bantamweight division, and one of the most interesting debuts in the UFC in a very long time, as Kayla Harrison, for a very long time, the best women's fighter not in the UFC, steps into the octagon for the first time, going up against Holly Holm. Holm, 42 years old, born out of Albuquerque, training at Jackson Wink MMA Academy since 2007. 15-6 in her career with 1 no contest, 8 wins by knockout, another 7 by decision. She has been stopped twice, once by knockout, knockout and once by submission. Coming off of a no contest against Maria Bueno Silva at the UFC on ESPN in July. Initially, she lost to Silva, but it was overturned due to a positive test. So she's 3-1 with one no contest in her last five times into the cage, with the last three coming by decision. The former bantamweight champion has wins over Ronda Rousey, lost it to Miesha Tate. She's 8-6 in the UFC with a couple of knockout wins. A pro mixed martial artist since 2011, but a pro boxer and kickboxer since 2002. Going up against Harrison, 33 years old, out of Middletown, Ohio, training at American Top Team, 16-1 for the MMA career, 6 wins by knockout, 6 by submission, and her only loss coming by unanimous decision. Her last fight at PFL 10 2023 was a unanimous decision win over Aspen Ladd, a bounce back after her first career L a year earlier. She is the 2012 and 2016 Olympic gold medalist in judo, the 2019 PFL Women's Lightweight Champion, 2021 PFL Women's Lightweight Champion as well. Every fight but one in the PFL. She is 14-1 in PFL with a 1-0 mark in Invicta. This will be her UFC debut. She's a pro since 2018 and competed in her first Judo World Championship in 2009. It is easy to draw the parallels that the last time an Olympic-level judo player stepped into the cage with Holly Holm, it ended famously poorly for them. But Kayla Harrison is in 2024 is not what Ronda Rousey was about a decade earlier. Kayla Harrison has a complete bag in mixed martial arts. Now, if she tries to stand and trade with Holly Holm, she's going to have a bad time. But she has an understanding. I'm not going to say she has fought strikers as skilled as Holly Holm, because quite frankly, I don't know if there is a woman alive who could say that. Holly Holm, elite at what she does, and has an understanding as well of some of the other areas, and at least can defend those against most. But I just feel like Kayla Harrison has a very good idea of what she is looking to do, and how to execute that. And I do think she will be able to get the job done. Holly Holm, at this point, like we said, it's two knockout wins, all her last three wins coming by decision. I just don't think there's going to be enough time on the feet for her to piece up Harrison and come away with a decision win. So I just feel like Harrison is going to be able to come in and get the job done. She is a substantial favorite coming into this fight. Then a fun one in the featherweight division as Calvin Kattar takes on Aljamain Sterling. Kattar is 36 years old, born in Methuen, Massachusetts. Apologies if I'm saying that wrong. Training out of New England Cartel. 23-7 for his career, 11 wins by knockout, a couple of submission wins on there as well. He's been stopped twice, once by knockout, once by submission. His TKO loss coming to Arnold Allen on October 29th, 2022, it ended with a knee injury, hence the extended layoff for Kattar. He's lost three of his last four, two by decision, 7-5 in the UFC, four wins by knockout. He has never won three in a row in his UFC career, and has been a pro since 2007. For Sterling, 34 years old, born in Uniondale, New York, training at Cerro Longo Fight Team, 23-4 for the MMA career, three wins by knockout, eight by submission. He also has a disqualification win. He's been knocked out twice and has two decision losses. His last bout was the one where he lost his bantamweight championship as he dropped it to Sean O'Malley in a knockout loss in the second round. His last two losses, he has been finished. That fight ended a 9-fight winning streak. He's 15-4 in the UFC, where he has resided since 2014, and is a pro since 2011. The last time Sterling fought someone who was popular in Boston, it didn't go great. But Calvin Kattar, coming off of a knee injury, and it was not... Oh, it looked ugly. I'm happy that he is able to come back. This is still one of the, like, obviously very experienced fighter in the octagon, very talented, technically sound fighter. I just don't think he has an answer for the speed of Aljamain Sterling. It'll be interesting to see how Sterling moves up to 145 pounds after dropping the belt back at 135. Like, Calvin Kattar just feels like a bigger fighter than Aljamain Sterling is. But Kattar was having some trouble with the speed of Arnold Allen in that fight back in October. And now, coming off of a knee injury that looked really, really bad, against Aljamain Sterling, who is very quick on the feet, has very good kicks as well, and just a really well-rounded offensive game. I just don't think Cater is going to be able to keep up in this fight. I think Aljamain Sterling really starts to pull away as this fight goes on, and I think Aljamain Sterling picks up probably a unanimous decision win in what is a really fun move up to, in the featherweight division. And I'm very intrigued to see what he can do at 145. Then we move to another fun one. It's in the light heavyweight division. It's Yuri Prohachka taking on Alexander Rakic. Prohachka, 31 years old, born in Czechoslovakia, training at Extreme Couture. 29-4-1 for the career. 25 wins by knockout, 3 by submission. He has been knocked out 3 times and submitted once. One of those knockout losses came back at UFC 295, where he lost the UFC's light heavyweight champion to one of our main eventers this evening, Alex Pereira. A 13-fight win streak came to an end that saw 12 finishes. 3-1 in the UFC. And this is where the problems have lied with this particular fighter. He's fought once in 2020, once in 2021, once in 2022, and once in 2023. Now, that once was in November of 2023, so that this isn't an extended layoff for the former light heavyweight champion, but it's getting ring time has certainly been a bit of an issue for the 31-year-old, who is coming off of a run in Ryzen where he finished 12-1 and was the promotion's inaugural light heavyweight champion. He's been a pro since 2012. Taking on Rakic, who's 32 years old, born in Vienna, Austria, training now at American Top Team with a 14-3 record, 9 wins by knockout, 1 by submission, being stopped twice, once by knockout, once by submission. His last bout came all the way back in 2022. It was a TKO loss to Jan Blachowicz. That ended with a knee injury. He's 3-2 in his last 5. His last 2 wins have been by decision. And again, one fight in 2020, one fight in 2021, one fight in 2022, didn't fight at all in 23. He's 6-2 in the UFC with 4 decision wins. He's been in the promotion since 2017 and a pro since 2011. Interesting note, he's 14-3, lost his professional debut. So love stories like that, where they have that professional debut, it doesn't go their way, and they bounce back and end up on the biggest stage the sport has to offer. I'm interested to see how Rakic comes back from this knee injury. It did feel like there was maybe a little bit of an upward climb coming with this particular fighter, but again, 3-2 in his last 5, just hasn't really been able to get going. For Prohachka, this is one of the quicker turnarounds that he has had. It didn't go great for him, but he also was looking pretty good in the fight against Pereira. I think if Prohachka is at the peak of his abilities, he wins this one, and I'm not going to say wins it easily, because Rakic is very good. I just feel like, while he is unorthodox, he is also very, very skilled on the feet. A bit of a well-rounded game, working on the ground game, but a well-rounded game nonetheless. And it is someone who I have a great amount of confidence in and a lot of respect for the talent. The hair? The talent, for sure. I think that he is someone who can absolutely pick up a big victory here. So I have Prohachka coming up against the returning Alexander Rakic. Then we get to the pay-per-view main card. It is Bo Nickel taking on Cody Brundage in the middleweight division. Nickel is 28 years old out of Rifle, Colorado. He is training at American Top Team. 5-0 is the record. 2 wins by knockout, 3 by submission. He is certainly one of those don't blink fighters, coming off of a first round knockout of Valentin Woodburn at UFC 290. First round knockout, rather common. His fight lengths, 38 seconds, 254, 52 seconds, 1:02, and 33 seconds. He's 2-0 in the UFC after 2 stints on Dana White's Contender Series, and he made his pro debut in Jorge Masvidal's Icon FC 3. A pro since 2022, when he went 3-0 that year and 2-0 in 2023. Brundage, 29 years old, born in Chapin, South Carolina, training at Factory X. 10-5 in his career, 5 wins by knockout, 3 by submission. He's lost twice by knockout and once by submission. Coming off of a knockout win over Zachary Reese back at the UFC on ESPN2. Back-to-back first-round wins, albeit one of them by disqualification. 2 wins in a row after 3 losses in a row. He has finished every trip into the octagon so far. He's been with the promotion since 2021 and is 4-4 in the UFC. A pro since 2019 and a BJJ blue belt. This is not the test Bo Nickel is looking for. Bo Nickel, I think, probably runs through Brundage here. All due respect, Brundage coming off of, like we said, back-to-back wins, ones by disqualification. But Bo Nickel, I think, is ready for a significant step forward. And you can absolutely play this clip if it doesn't necessarily go that way. This kind of feels like a WWF Superstars type of a squash match and a chance for Nickel to call out some higher up competition. Maybe that there is a bit more resistance than 33 seconds. I don't know if there is going to be resistance to the point of getting this one to the stool for the first time for Bo Nickel. I think he wins this one. He's like a minus a billion favorite right now over Brundage. Lightweight title eliminator is up next as Charles de Bronx Oliveira goes up against Armin Sarukian. Oliveira is 34 years old, born in Sao Paulo, Brazil, training out of Shootabox Academy. 34-9 and won no contest in his illustrious career. 10 wins by knockout, another 21 by submission, 4 losses by knockout, 4 submission losses as well. Coming off of a knockout win in the first round over Benil Dariush at UFC 289, he's won 12 of his last 13, with the only loss there coming to Islam Makhachev. He's finished 11 of them. He's finished his last 4 wins. He has the most submission wins in the history of the Ultimate Fighting Championship. The former lightweight champion is 22-9 in the UFC, a third-degree BJJ black belt. He's been a pro since 2008. His debut as a professional, he won a 3-fight tournament. Going up against Sarukian, who's 27 years old, born in the country of Georgia, training at American Top Team. 21-3 is his MMA record. 9 wins by knockout, another 5 by submission. He has been stopped once in his career. It was a knockout loss. He had a knockout win in his last bout. Poor Benil Dariush, who lost in that one as well back in December of last year on the UFC on ESPN. He's won 3 fights in a row. He's finished 2 of them. He's won 9 of his last 8, and he's finished 4 of his last 5 wins. He lost to Islam Makhachev in his UFC debut and is 8-2 in the company, making his debut in 2019. He's been a pro since 2015. Oliveira is actually a sizable underdog in this fight, and I don't totally understand it. Yes, Islam Makhachev whooped that ass when they fought for the lightweight championship. I think we're going to see more and more that's going to be rather commonplace. Islam Makhachev is the pound-for-pound number one fighter in the world for a reason. Charles de Bronx is still incredibly well-rounded. His striking, exquisite. His groundwork speaks for itself with the most submission wins in the history of the sport. In the history of the company, anyway. For Sarukian, he put on a really good show against Benil Dariush. And this is absolutely the right time to elevate this fighter. And he is getting better every time he steps into the octagon, and that cannot be overlooked. I just don't think he is on the Charles Oliveira level. I think we are seeing what Makhachev did to Oliveira and forgetting what Oliveira did to everyone else in this division. Oliveira, I think, is a bit of a more well-rounded fighter than Sarukian. Sarukian's pressure can absolutely be a problem, but I think Oliveira is going to have a counter for that. I got the upset here. I like Oliveira, plus 185. I think Charles de Bronx is able to either keep Sarukian off of him with technically sound striking, or be able to trip this one up, take it to the ground, and that is where he is a master. So I just feel like, well, Sarukian, he has more than a puncher's chance. Like, I know I'm giving this very one-sided. There's totally a way Sarukian wins this fight. It is with constant pressure on the offensive side, understanding that there is going to be a barrage coming back and being okay with that, and just hoping that your power kind of wins out more. Again, that makes it sound like it's just a puncher's chance. I really don't believe that. Sarukian is a really, really good fighter, and it's a fist fight. But I just feel like Oliveira, again, more tools in the toolbox. I like Oliveira, and I love him as an underdog at plus 185. Then we get into the title fights. As I've said, this card has 2.5 title fights. The first one for the BMF Championship. It is the reigning and defending bad motherfucker Justin Gaethje going up against Max Holloway. This one in the lightweight division, which is interesting. Gaethje, at 35 years old, out of Tucson, Arizona, has changed his career at Elevation Fight Team with a 25-4 record. 20 wins by knockout and 1 by submission. He's been knocked out twice in his career and submitted twice. Coming off of a win for the BMF title at UFC 291, a knockout victory over Dustin Poirier. He has back-to-back wins after losing the lightweight title fight to Charles Oliveira. He's won three of his last four. He's been in the UFC since 2017. He has six finishes in his 8-4 record in the promotion. He's also been finished in all four of his losses. He started his career undefeated, including a 10-0 run in the World Series of Fighting, a pro since 2011, and not that he uses it, but he was a Division I wrestler at the University of Northern Colorado. Going up against Max Holloway, 32 years old, out of Waianae, Hawaii, training at Gracie Techniques, 25-7 for his career. 11 knockout wins. I don't know why I'm stumbling on the Holloway stuff. Two submission wins. He has also been submitted once and has six decision losses. Coming off of a third round knockout over Chan Sheng Zheng back at the Ultimate Fight Night in August of 2023. His first finish since 2018, which was a doctor stoppage after the fourth round. He does have back-to-back wins, and he's won four of his last five. Three of his last four UFC losses have come to Alex Volkanovski, hence the move up to 155 pounds. Poirier, the other one, the former featherweight champion, 21-7 in the Ultimate Fighting Championship. He's been with the promotion since 2012 and a pro since 2010. Max Holloway is legitimately, like, these are two of my absolute favorite fighters, and I would suggest two of almost any MMA fan's favorite fighters. So, how does this fight go down? If Max Holloway is going to win this fight, it is going to be with just an absurd amount of volume. That is what he has done so well in his career. We have seen him put otherworldly ass kickings on people because the cardio is insane and the volume never stops. His length gives him a real nice edge. The one thing, though, it's now at 155 pounds, and he wasn't exactly putting cats away at 145 pounds. So what does that power look like at 155? That is the concern that I have for Max Holloway, because Justin Gaethje hits like a truck. And that is where I kind of get held up with Holloway, is that for him to win this fight, he has to be perfect for 25 minutes. For Gaethje to win this fight, he's got to land a bomb once. And training with Trevor Whitman, he has been exceptional at not getting into those firefights and being technically sound and finding where to strike instead of just rock 'em, sock 'em robots and going from there. This is such a fun fight. It's such an intriguing fight. But I just feel like Gaethje isn't going to be affected too much by the power of Holloway and is, I'm not going to say walk through it, but I think he's going to be able to deal with those shots and be able to land the power shots of his own. I do think eventually that builds and allows Justin Gaethje to put this one away. So I have Gaethje winning this one by stoppage. It's a pick that I'm clicking at minus 150. That's where I'm going with Justin Gaethje. This is going to be such a fun fight with two incredibly skilled fighters, two fighters destined for every Hall of Fame this sport offers, which unfortunately isn't a lot of them, but two amazing fighters, two of my absolute favorites, and it's going to be tough watching one of them lose coming up on Saturday. In the co-main event, it is the Women's Strawweight Championship on the line as the champion Zhang Weili defends against her countrymate, the challenger, Yan Zhaonan. Weili is 34 years old, born in China. She stands at 5'4", training at, among others, Black Tiger Fight Club. She is 24-3 with one no contest, 11 wins by knockout, 8 wins by submission. She's been knocked out once and has two decision losses. I should say she also goes to Syndicate MMA in Las Vegas. We saw that on the Countdown show. She is coming off of a defense of her strawweight championship in a victory over Amanda Lemos at UFC 292. She is a two-time champion after losing it to Rose Namajunas. She has wins over Carla Esparza, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, and Jessica Andrade. A couple of fighters in there who made an appearance on our all-time pound-for-pound rankings that we did earlier in the week. She's 8-2 in the UFC. She's been with the promotion since 2018 and has four finishes. She's been a pro since 2013, and the cherry on top, she was 2-2 as a kickboxer. Zhaonan is 34 years old, also born in China, standing at 5'5", training at Team Alpha Male. 17-3 is the record. 8 wins by knockout, 9 by decision. She's been stopped twice in her career, once by knockout, once by submission. She is the number one contender coming off of a win over Jessica Andrade at UFC 288, a stoppage win, her first in the UFC. It came in the first round. It's back-to-back wins after back-to-back losses. She has defeated fighters like Angela Hill, Carolina Kovacevich, and Claudia Gadelha. 8-2 in the UFC. She's been in the company since 2017 and a pro since 2008. This is a really, really fun fight for me because I think Jan has made incredible gains in her career, especially since going to Team Alpha Male. She has really grown as a striker. You could see it in the Andrade fight. Her technical ability was phenomenal. And when Andrade came charging in, it was Zhao Nan putting it away with the combo. She did to Andrade what so many fighters do, what Andrade has done to so many fighters. So how she wins this is either it turns into a bit of a firefight and she's got some power and just drills it, but she is the longer fighter in this bout. And again, it's that keeping Wei Li at range and trying to keep it off of her. Wei Li, it is the proverbial, as I have said, more tools in the toolbox. The thing that I love about Wei Li, go back to the Carla Esparza fight. Wei Li is significantly more skilled on the feet than Carla Esparza is. On the ground, it might be Edge Esparza. So what happened is Wei Li was landing significantly on the feet. Esparza goes for the takedown. When it gets to the ground, she turns it into one of those cartoons where it is just a dust ball everywhere and there's just limbs flying out of it. She turned it into chaos and that was an equalizer. She has a real great understanding of what she is good at and she's good at everything. I shouldn't say what she's bad at because she is extremely well-rounded as well, but she has an understanding of what she has the edge in and what she doesn't. And when she doesn't have it, she kind of turns, she finds a way to equalize it some way or another. I have this feeling that Zhao Nan, it is kind of her time. She has been improving in each fight. And I think that power is going to play. Wei Li is so talented in all of these, but I feel like it might just be because the odds are so long on Zhao Nan at plus 390 that I'm edging more and more towards her. I just feel like that power is really going to be impactful. And at Team Alpha Male, you know the groundwork is going to be fine. But I just feel like the strides that she has made in the stand-up give her a slight technical edge there. And that's where I think a lot of this fight is going to take place. So I'm going with the plus 390 upset for today's ticket. Yan Zhao Nan is getting on there at plus 390. I think we have a gigantic upset in the co-main event and a new strawweight champion. And that gets us to the main event of the evening. It is not the gigantic names that we were promised. It is just two of the best fighters in the world going head to head. It is Alex Pereira defending the light heavyweight championship against a man who never lost his, Jamal Hill. Pereira, 36 years old, standing at 6'4", out of Sao Paulo, Brazil, training at Teixeira MMA and Fitness. He is 9-2 in his meteoric MMA career, 7 wins by knockout, a pair by decision. He has been knocked out and submitted once in his career. His last bout, where he won the light heavyweight championship, he picked up a second round knockout over Yuri Prohachka, that won him the light heavyweight championship. He's 2-0 in light heavyweight. Back-to-back wins after losing the middleweight championship to Israel Adesanya. He has beat 4 former champions in Sean Strickland, Israel Adesanya, Yuri Prohachka, and Jan Blachowicz. He's 6-1 in the UFC and is a 2-division champion, only the 9th to do that in the company's history and the 1st to do it between middleweight and light heavyweight. He's been a pro since 2015, again, lost his MMA debut, a pro kickboxer since 2012, former Glory light heavyweight and middleweight champion. Going up against the former champion Hill, 32 years old, standing 6'4", born in Chicago, training at Black Lion Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, 12-1 for his career with one no contest, 7 wins by knockout, 5 by decision. His only loss, he was knocked out. Coming off of a championship win over Glover Teixeira at UFC 283, where he won the vacant light heavyweight championship, he had to vacate the title himself due to an Achilles injury in a basketball game at International Fight Week that happened just 9 months ago. When that happened, he was on a 4-fight winning streak, had won 5 of his last 6. Coming off of Dana White's Contender Series, he is 6-1 in the octagon with 1 no contest, 4 wins by knockout, and a pro since 2017. What happened to Jamal Hill is heartbreaking. It's nothing that happened in the cage. It wasn't even in training. He was just playing some basketball and felt that pop. And all of a sudden, his career gets derailed for what should have been a couple of years. Instead, it is just 9 months coming back. And A, I never want to have an Achilles injury. I don't stay up at night dreaming about it or anything like that, but it seems miserable. Like, you just can't walk. So that seems like it sucks. But also, if I were to come back from an Achilles injury and get in a fight with someone, and again, I wouldn't want to fight anyone, Alex Pereira might be the last human being on earth I would want to fight coming off of that because of his exquisite leg kicking ability. He generates so much power with no hip turn or anything like that. It is just, he just sticks his leg out and it just, wha-bam, shoots off of guys. The power he is able to generate with no windup is incredible. He beat the piss out of Yuri Prochazka's leg and really wore him down, and to the point where it was certainly a mobility issue, and I don't think it played into the finish, although I do think it allowed Pereira to keep the fight standing. The one thing that I think Hill can take from the Pereira loss is the, and again, far be it from me to critique the stand-up of a former two-division kickboxing champion who is now a two-division UFC champion. But the one thing that Prochazka seemed to be able to take advantage of was Pereira backing straight up. And he noticed that when he was using a lot of feints early on, and it ended up with Pereira getting backed up to the fence. And when Prochazka had the success that he had in that fight, and there was a fair amount of it, it was when Pereira backed up into the fence and kind of got caught up. And that's when Prochazka was able to start landing with some power, getting that takedown, which led to not a ton of offense because Pereira defended pretty well off of his back, but he ate a couple of elbows that looked just miserable. Hall can be the type of pressure fighter that forces Pereira back into that. The problem is, Pereira is almost assassin-like in his calmness in those type of situations. He didn't panic, he didn't go flying away or get into this wild firefight. He ate a couple, for sure, but he was able to stay calm in that. And Prochazka charging at him in the second round, he ends up with a two-punch combo. They talked about the stoppage on the broadcast. I thought it was fine because you see Prochazka go limp as he's going for a takedown, and Pereira is landing those elbows. But I think Hill's best opportunity is to pressure Pereira into the fence, kind of put him with nowhere to go, and then start landing some of your big shots there. But you do have to be ready, because that counter is coming, and it could completely alter this fight. So, again, this is one where, like, Hill has game-changing power as well. So it's not quite Holloway Gaethje, where I think Hill has to fight perfectly for 25 minutes, because he can land that one shot that just absolutely has you staring up at the lights, and has Bruce Buffer at the end of the night talking about how we have a new light heavyweight champion. Hill 100% has that power. The thing is that that does also play into a strength of Pereira, and that is his counter-strike ability. And I just think with Pereira's ability to land those leg kicks, his calmness under pressure, the absurd technicality, or technical ability, I should say, that he has in the stand-up, I think it just edges this one out. Hill is a phenomenal fighter and an excellent striker, but Pereira is a world-class striker. And I think that's the difference in this fight, is that Hill is excellent at what he does, and Pereira is one of the best in the world at it. It is a slight difference, but it's enough that has me believing that we're going to get an and still at the end of the main event, and Alex Pereira will walk away still as your light heavyweight champion. I have Pereira right now at minus 127. That's what I'm going to go with to click on that one as well. So a few plays on this one from a gambling perspective. We have Rodriguez plus 120 over Andrade, Lopez minus 140 over Yusuf. We have Yuri Prochazka at minus 105 in his bout. Charles Oliveira plus 185. Justin Gaethje minus 150. We have Zhao Nan at plus 390 and Pereira at minus 127. This is going to be such a fun night. It is a stacked night of fights that I cannot wait to sit down and watch each and every one of them. That's going to do it for our UFC 300 preview. It has been such a fun week breaking all of these great fights down. It's been fun to see some of the viewership numbers on some of those and some of the listening numbers as well. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this breakdown and have enjoyed the week. We're going to have some, it may not be live. Well, it certainly won't be live, but it may not be Saturday night. It might be sometime into Sunday. We have some family stuff going on tomorrow that is going to keep me from watching the pay-per-view live. So the recap show may be a bit delayed. Also, apologies. I had said throughout the week that we will have a Mark Coleman legacy look and some pro wrestling talk on this show, but we're coming up on 50 minutes here on this particular program, so I just don't think that we need to extend this anymore. So that stuff will be coming into next week. Once again, thank you guys so much for tuning in today. Follow me on social media, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. I'm at Primetime Klein, twitch.tv/primetimepk, and you can email this show, couchpotatodiary@yahoo.com. If you're listening to this show, make sure that you subscribe and leave a review. If you are watching, make sure you like, subscribe, and comment. I've had a blast this week. This has been so much fun, and I will talk to all of you later.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.